Even though the wagons didn't bog down, the softer ground meant that their pace was somewhat slower that day. Preacher estimated that they had covered only about 5 miles before he called a halt late that afternoon. The ground would be slow in drying out, so it might continue to delay their progress for several days, but they would push on anyway and make what headway they could. They were able to find enough buffalo chips that would burn to make a small fire. Preacher tended to horse, as he normally would, while Jerome and Deborah prepared supper. He didn't tell anyone about the nocturnal scouting trip he planned, and he didn't intend to let anyone in on it except Blackie, who was the only one of the bunch Preacher fully trusted. When supper was ready, everyone gathered around the fire.
What was going on this morning, Preacher? You looked like something was wrong.
I just thought I heard some gunshots off in the distance.
Well, that's not good, is it?
It don't necessarily mean a damn thing. I know when you look around, it seems like we're the only folks in 100 miles or more because the prairie's so big and open and empty. But that ain't the way it is. There are Injun hunting parties like the one we saw this morning, and fur trappers coming and going to the mountains, and even some surveying expeditions every now and then with an army escort. I've heard some folks who don't know no better call this the Great American Desert. Well, it ain't a desert, but you can see for yourself just by looking around. And it ain't deserted, neither.
So you're saying that we don't have to worry about the shots?
No, I ain't saying that at all. It pays to worry about anything that's even a mite unusual. Of course, 9 times out of 10, it don't amount to anything. But that 10th time, you better be ready for all hell to break loose. Excuse my language, ma'am.
That's all right, Preacher. I'm familiar with the concept of hell breaking loose, even though I suppose I've never really experienced it.
If you were back in St. Louis, where you're supposed to be, you wouldn't have to worry about such things.
I'm not worried. In fact, I'm having a wonderful time.
After everyone had eaten, Preacher had Blackie and Nielsen take the first watch. They picked up their rifles and headed for opposite sides of the circle of wagons. Everyone else began getting ready to turn in, including Preacher, who planned to make it look like he had gone to sleep before he left on his scouting mission. Once the camp was settled down, he would slip over to Blackie and inform the one-eyed man of his plans. To make things look normal, Preacher stretched out on his blankets underneath one of the wagons and pretended to go to sleep. He waited a while, then was about to crawl out and get started, when he looked out and saw a dark shape flitting across the camp. Preacher frowned and his jaws clenched. Somebody else was skulking around tonight, and he didn't like it. This was going to interfere with his plans. He watched as the shadowy figure left the camp. Figuring that he knew what was going on, he wasn't surprised when a few minutes later someone else slipped away from the circle of wagons, being careful to avoid the places where Blackie and Nielsen stood guard.
Goddamn lovebirds.
They were taking chances, not only with their affair, but also by venturing out onto the plains like that after dark. If they ran into any trouble out there, the odds were they wouldn't be able to handle it themselves. If a Cheyenne or Arapaho or Pawnee war party came across them, they would lose their hair for sure. Preacher debated whether to go after them and keep an eye on them or just hope for the best when that decision was taken out of his hands. He saw someone else catfooting across the camp, then stepping over a wagon tongue and vanishing into the darkness.
Now who the hell is that?
Preacher slipped out from under the wagon.
Looks like there's going to be a whole goddamn convention of skulkers tonight.
Preacher was on his way past the wagon shared by Jerome and Jake when the youngster's head poked out through the flap.
Preacher, is that you?
Shh, keep it down, boy. Sound carries out here at night.
What's going on? Is there trouble? I woke up and Mr. Hart was gone. Have you seen him?
Yeah, I know where he is. No need for you to worry about him.
I thought maybe the engines had come back and there was going to be a fight. I didn't want to sleep through it.
Nope, no engines. Go on back to bed now.
All right. I guess Mr. Hart just went to answer the call of nature.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Preacher waited until the boy had ducked back into the tent, then turned toward the spot where he had seen the three sneaking figures disappear into the darkness.
Deborah! Jerome! Oh, my God!
Oh, shit.
How dare you? My own cousin!
This has nothing to do with you, damn
it! Nothing to do with me! For God's sake, it has everything to do with me! That's the woman I intend to marry, and I find you with your hands all over her!
Deborah will never marry you! She's a fine woman, and she deserves a lot better than a man who treats her as badly as you do, Corliss!
You're insane! I've never done anything to harm her!
No! Nothing but scold and belittle her in front of everyone! Good Lord, Corliss! Can't you even see how awful you've been to her?
She shouldn't have come along! I knew something bad would happen!
The only bad thing that's happened is that this poor woman made the mistake of accepting your marriage proposal!
Stop it, both of you! Just stop it!
Now all of you hush up, damn it!
Jerome stood with his left arm draped protectively around Deborah's shoulders. She had both hands pressed to her mouth. Corliss stood a few feet away, glaring at him. Both of his hands were clenched into fists.
This is a private matter, Preacher.
No, not anymore, it ain't. Not the way the two of you been bellering like stuck pigs. I'd say everybody within a half a mile knows exactly what's going on.
I'm sorry we disturbed the camp.
What about me? I'm disturbed! Hell, the way you two were going, you'd have been rutting on the ground like animals in another couple of minutes.
That's not true. Jerome is a gentleman. He's never done anything except kiss me. Even though I wanted him to do more.
You trollop!
How dare you! You can't talk to Deborah like that!
Why not? Obviously that's what she is!
Jerome took a few quick steps towards Corliss.
Oh, hell.
I'm glad you did that, Jerome.
Apologize! I demand that you apologize to Deborah!
You can go to hell, both of you!
Preacher just stood there, shook his head as the two of them rolled around on the ground, punching and gouging at each other. By now, everyone else in the group was pounding up, including Jake. The boy tugged at Preacher's sleeve.
What's going on? How come Mr. Corliss and Mr. Jerome are fighting? Ain't you gonna stop him, Preacher?
Now, too late for that, I reckon, boy. You gotta get out what's inside of them, and the only way to do that is what they're doing now.
Yep, but how come they're wailing away on each other? Something happened to make him mad?
I reckon that Dale happened.
You mean Miss Deborah?
All right now, everybody go on back to the wagon. This ain't any of our business. Those trade goods don't need to be sitting over there without anybody watching them.
Nobody's gonna sneak up and steal the wagons with us right here.
All right, fine. If there's any trouble, I'll just hold you responsible.
All right. Come on, fellas.
Black guy. You and Lars go on back to guard duty like you were before.
Looks like we didn't do a very good job, since the lady and her two bows left camp without us even noticing.
Well, you were watching for people trying to sneak in, not out.
And for God's sakes, take the boy with you. Preacher put a hand on Jake's shoulder and turned him away from Corliss and Jerome.
I want to stay and find out who wins.
Growing boys need their sleep.
You think I'm just going to go to sleep after this?
Blackie put a hand on Jake's other shoulder.
Come on, kid. Preacher's your boss on this trip. We all agree to that.
Grudgingly, Jake allowed himself to be led away. The others all went back to the wagons, too, leaving Preacher and Deborah to watch Corliss and Jerome wallop the living hell out of each other.
Can't you do something? Can't you stop them before they kill each other?
Oh, they ain't gonna kill each other. Neither one of them's good enough fighter for that. They'll just wallop each other until they get too tired to keep going.
And what's that going to solve?
Not a damn thing. Pretty sure those lines things up.
Preacher!
All right. Now, damn it, that's enough. Settle down, the both of them.
The two cousins showed no resistance to Preacher whatsoever. The fact was, they were exhausted.
He started it. He threw the first punch. And he stole my fiance.
You forced her away from you the way you treated her. You don't deserve to have her.
Both of you, just stop, please. Can't you see what you're doing to me?
Doing to you? I'm trying to help you.
I'm trying to keep this bastard from stealing you from me.
You're tearing me apart. That's what you're doing.
Deborah.
Leave her alone. Haven't you done enough damage already?
I'm not the one who did the damage. You're supposed to be in love with this woman, for God's sake. If you just treated her decently,
If you fellas go to scuffling again, I'm going to be tempted to knock the living shit out of both of them.
You work for us, you know. We could dismiss you.
Oh, yes. That would be the intelligent thing to do. Dismiss our guide when we're hundreds of miles away from civilization, surrounded by untamed wilderness.
We'd be fine. We know we're supposed to follow the river, and nothing has happened to us so far, has it?
Oh, no. Nothing except an encounter with Indians who might well have wiped us all out, if not for Preacher's expertise in dealing with them.
They didn't seem all that hostile to me.
Then you're an even bigger fool than I already thought you were. Wait a minute! Damn it, this isn't about Preacher, it's about Deborah. What are we going to do?
You're going to keep your filthy hands off of her. That's what we're going to do.
Jerome put his arm around Deborah's shoulders again. Corliss squinted at him in anger and took a step forward, clenching his fists again. Preacher was ready this time, though. He was going to clout Corliss if the younger man tried to throw another punch. But instead, Corliss stopped short as he saw the way Deborah turned into Jerome's embrace and buried her face against his chest.
There, there, Deborah. It'll be all right.
She used to turn to me when she was upset.
Yes, well, that was before you began behaving in such an arrogant, high-handed manner. Women are like delicate flowers.
No, we're not! But we still like to be treated decently!
All right. Maybe I am to blame for some of the problems. But you took advantage of the situation, Jerome. You know you did.
That was never my intention. Things just happened. I didn't plan to fall in love with her.
Shut up! I don't want to hear any more about it, and I don't want to talk about it. We'll discuss this in the morning.
Corliss stalked off toward the wagons.
Yes, I think that's a good idea. Come along, Deborah. I'll take you back to your wagon. You need to get some rest. You're distraught.
No, I'm not. I'm just mad because things have to be so damn complicated.
Jerome looked shocked that Deborah would use such blunt, unladylike language, but he didn't say anything about it. Preacher figured that was probably a smart move. She wasn't in any mood to be scolded about anything, and if Jerome tried, she was liable to haul off and wallop the shit out of him. The two of them walked off, leaving Preacher standing there alone on the prairie. He listened intently, searching for anything unusual in the night sounds. Hearing nothing, he thought again about the plans he had made for tonight. As upset as everybody was, he decided it might be a good idea to postpone his scouting mission to see if anyone was following him. So he went back to the wagons instead of heading off into the night on foot. When he reached the circle, he found Jerome waiting for him.
Preacher, I'm sorry. I know I've caused a problem here, but I couldn't help it. Like I told Corliss, what happened between Deborah and me was just... Well, it just happened.
Yeah, I know. I ain't no expert on such things as falling in love, but I do know that it's a mite like being attacked by Indians.
It is? How so?
Most of the time it comes out of nowhere, and if you ain't lucky, you wind up with your scalp dangling from somebody else's belt.
The atmosphere in camp the next morning was chilly. But it had nothing to do with the weather. Corliss Hart sat by himself on a wagon tongue, sipping from a cup of coffee and frowning. Anyone who spoke to him got a curt, unfriendly answer. He didn't come anywhere near his cousin Jerome or Deborah Morrigan, who sat with Jerome near the campfire. Then Corliss suddenly strode into the middle of the camp.
Jerome, come here. We have to talk.
What do you want?
Just come here.
Preacher was putting the saddle on a horse while Jake stood nearby and watched him, scratching dog's ears at the same time. They all looked around at the sound of Corliss's voice.
Oh boy, you think they're gonna fight again?
They darn well better not.
Preacher turned and strode toward Corliss, trailed by Jake and the dog. Jerome came from the other direction and he got there first.
Well, what is it? There's work to do before we can get started again, you know?
I don't care, I'm not going.
Not going? What in the world do you mean, not going?
Not with you, anyway. We're splitting up, Jerome.
Don't be insane. We're partners. We've worked together for years now. We put equal amounts of money into this venture. We can't split up.
I don't see why not. We'll divide the goods right down the middle and each take three wagons.
Oh, there's no reason to do that.
There's the best reason in the world. My engagement to Deborah is over.
Well, I think that goes without saying under the circumstances.
That being the case, I'm not going to travel with her. Or with the man who stole her from me. And I'm sure as hell not going into business with you, you traitor.
Now, see here.
No, you see here. Our partnership is dissolved. We'll split the goods, like I said, and take different routes. We'll set up two trading posts instead of one.
But we can't do that.
Why not? The frontier is a big place. There'll be room for two trading posts. I think I ought to get the best spot, though, just to be fair. Since you get Deborah, after all. And also, to be fair, I think Preacher should go with me.
Ain't nobody gonna go their separate ways. That'd be a good way to get everybody killed. This bunch is too small already. We busted in half, and you'd all be easy targets for whatever trouble came along.
You see, Corliss, I told you...
What I see is that I can't stand to travel with the two of you, knowing how you've both betrayed me. I don't like to admit it, but it hurts too much. My God, Jerome, can't you see that my heart's broken?
Corliss, your heart is broken? Losing me has hurt you that badly?
Of course it has. I planned for us to spend the rest of our lives together. To have that taken away from me is almost more than I can stand. That's why I can't stay around while the two of you are... Well, I just can't. That's all. And since I financed this expedition in equal shares with Jerome, the only solution is to divide everything right down the middle. Except you, of course, Deborah. We can't do that. He's won.
No. No, he hasn't. Not if you truly love me enough so that you're heartbroken over losing me. I thought you didn't care anymore, Corliss.
Excuse me, but what's going on here?
Deborah wasn't sure she knew the answer to that one. Or maybe she did, because suddenly she stepped up to Corliss, put her arms around his neck, and pulled his head down to hers.
Oh, I get it now. Miss Deborah really liked Mr. Corliss better all along, but she thought Mr. Corliss didn't like her no more, so she took up with Mr. Jerome instead. But now that she knows Mr. Corliss still likes her, she wants to be with him again. Is that about the size of it, Preacher?
Yeah, I reckon.
Preacher figured he'd rather wrestle a grizzly again than have to sort out the romantic problems of these greenhorns. It was enough to make a man feel like he ought to go back to the mountains and never come out. Jerome looked like he'd been walloped over the head with a tree trunk. He stared at Corliss and Deborah, not comprehending what was happening right before his eyes. Preacher almost felt sorry for the poor son of a bitch. Almost.
Now, Jerome, you ain't gonna start talking that crazy talk about splitting up the expedition, are you?
No. No, I suppose not. But if things were different,
If things were different, we wouldn't be out here in the middle of nowhere having to depend on each other to survive. But that's the way it is. Everybody's got a job to do, and that's what's gonna keep us alive.
Jerome watched as Corliss and Deborah walked off, hand in hand.
You're right. Of course you're right, Preacher. I was a fool, wasn't I?
No more than every other man since Adam went traipsing through the garden.
Jerome looked around and saw that the drivers were watching him.
What are you men gaping at? Let's all get busy. The sun's up, for heaven's sake. We're burning daylight.
The tension that gripped the wagon train that morning lingered for the rest of the day, and for several days afterward. Jerome's face was set in grim, stony lines as he drove the lead wagon. He said a little, speaking only when he had to, and he never smiled, despite the fact that Jake rode beside him on the seat and chattered incessantly. Deborah rode with Corliss now, perched beside him on the seat, with her arm looped through his most of the time. It was domestic as all hell, Preacher thought as he tried to contain his disgust with the situation. He supposed that what had happened wasn't really anybody's fault, but he wished that Deborah hadn't driven such a big wedge between the cousins, whether that had been her intention or not.
See that blue line on the horizon, Jake?
Yeah, what is it?
Those are the mountains.
Really? I never seen any real mountains before, just pictures and books. How long will it take us to get there?
Another week, maybe more. It'll look like they're only a few miles off, and they're really still a long ways away, so don't get too excited just yet.
By nightfall, however, they had drawn close enough so that Preacher's eagle-like eyes could make out the pale areas that marked the snowfields at the top of the peaks. That snow, which never melted, gleamed in the fading light, gave the Rockies their sometime name of the Shining Mountains. Preacher pointed out the snow to Jake, but he wasn't sure if the boy really saw it. The next day, Jake was able to see the snow for sure, though, and so was everybody else. The feelings of anticipation grew stronger. These people were ready to reach the mountains. Even Jerome perked up a little after days of moping. But disappointment soon set in among those with the wagon train. Day after day passed, and they seemed to get no closer to those mountains. Preacher had seen it happen again and again when folks came west for the first time. He had warned them that distances were deceptive, but the sight of the mountains had made him forget what he'd said. Skyler thought those mountains were mighty fine looking, and he couldn't wait to get there. The summer's heat on the plains had grown worse over the past week. He was looking forward to the weather being a little cooler once they reached the peaks. And of course, once they got to the mountains, they were going to kill Preacher and all the others and take those wagons and all the goods they carried. Skyler was looking forward to that, too. It was the first step toward being rich. Actually, Fairfax planned to strike once the wagons reached the foothills. He wasn't going to wait until they were in the mountains proper, because it'd be harder to set up an ambush once the terrain became too rugged. They sat beside the tiny fire, built in a hole some of the men had dug earlier, so the flames wouldn't be visible, and figured out what they were going to do next.
The first thing is to get around that wagon train and move on ahead of it. Once we've done that, we can find a suitable spot for a trap. As many rifles as we've got, we ought to be able to kill all of them in one volley. They won't never know what hit them.
Preacher's mine.
You've had 3 shots at him and missed with all 3. I think anyone who can bring that bastard down should go ahead and do it.
Damn it, Colin. I had good reasons for missing him those other times.
Yes, like the fact that you're a poor shot. No, Preacher's too dangerous to take any chances with. Anyone who has a good shot at him, take it. I want that son of a bitch dead as soon as possible when we hit the wagon train.
The next morning, the gang of killers and thieves crossed the Platte River so they could begin swinging farther north and west to get around the wagon train. They had to be careful because of the treacherous mud and quicksand, but they were able to make the ford without any incidents. Skyler was surprised when, a short time later, they came to another broad, shallow, muddy stream.
That was the Platte we forded back yonder. What river is this?
According to the maps I studied back in St. Louis, the Platte split somewhere out here. That must have been the South Platte we crossed earlier, and this is the North Platte. I never noticed the split when we passed it. This river's such a maze of channels, it's hard to tell where it ends and where it begins.
The group forded the stream and then rode almost due north for several hours before turning west again. During one of the times when they had stopped to rest the horses, Skyler gazed off to the south and spotted something jutting up on the horizon.
What's that?
I don't know. Let me get my spyglass.
Fairfax studied the distant landmark for a few moments, then passed the spyglass to Skyler. When Skyler peered through the lens, he was able to tell that the thing was a spire of rock that rose straight up into the air from a broader base.
Chimney Rock. I remember seeing it marked in some of the maps. The trail Preacher and the others will be following goes right past it.
Damn! Must be tall to stick up like that when we're miles away from it.
Indeed. I hope Preacher and his companions are suitably impressed when they pass it. It may be one of the last such natural wonders they ever see.
As with everything else out here, the travelers saw Chimney Rock long before they reached it.
What's that?
Chimney Rock. Tomorrow we'll pass Scott's Bluff, and a couple of days after that we'll be in the foothills, skirting around the Laramie so we can cut over to the South Pass. Another week, and we can start looking for a good place to start building that trading post.
Another week? My God, is this trip never gonna end?
Jerome still hadn't recovered from Deborah going back to Corliss. But out here on the frontier, fella couldn't afford to spend too much time brooding over lost loves and such like. There was too much work to do, and too many dangers that could come out of nowhere. like war parted and suddenly boiled around the base of Chimney Rock and galloped straight across the prairie toward the line of wagons.
Son of a bitch! Circle the wagon! Circle the wagon!
By now, the men had had enough practice so that drawing the wagons into a circle was second nature to them. They had to keep their wits about them now, though, and perform the maneuver faster than they ever had before. Jake jumped down from the seat of the lead wagon and ran to the back of the vehicle. The boy reached inside and pulled out an armful of powder horns and shot pouches. He was getting ready to perform his reloading chores, and that was good. Corliss pushed Deborah inside their wagon.
Stay down!
Gil Robinson, Lars Nielsen, and Blackie all hurried to find good positions from which to fire. Pete Carey ran over to Jake and gathered up some of the powder horns and shot pouches. Rifles in hand, Corliss and Jerome crouched at the rear of their wagons. The engines were only about 100 yards away when Preacher surveyed the circle and gave a curt nod of satisfaction. The men had spread out so they could defend in every direction. Preacher swung down from the saddle, knelt beside one of the wagons, lifted his rifle to his shoulder, and set out to cut down some on the war party's numbers. Preacher squinted through the cloud of smoke and saw one of the engines lying sprawled on the ground. Suddenly, arrows flashed through the air. As long as the arrows kept missing, it didn't matter by how much. Preacher threw a bead on another of the engines as the war party split up to encircle the wagons. Another warrior toppled off the back of the galloping pony. The other defenders weren't as fast at reloading as Preacher was, nor were they as accurate with their shots. But with the help of Jake and Pete Carey, they kept up a pretty steady fire. Gradually, their shots began to take a toll. Several more of the engines fell, and a couple of the ponies collapsed when they were hit. But the attackers were doing some damage of their own. Oxen were skewered by the arrows. The engines were riding in a circle around the wagons now, the hooves of their ponies kicking up enough dust that it was difficult to see. That made aiming hard, too. On the other side of the circle, Lars Nielsen staggered back from his position with an arrow jutting from the upper part of his left arm. The big Swede dropped to his knees, grimacing in pain. At the same time, one of the Pawnee warriors leaped his pony through the gap between wagons that Nielsen had been defending. The engine lunged his mount toward Nielsen, lance poised to impale the Swede. Preacher's rifle was empty, so he snatched the tomahawk from behind his belt and flung it. Still wide-eyed in pain, Nielsen looked around at Preacher and managed to nod his thanks. At least half the members of the war party were down. They must not have been expecting the men with the wagon train to put up such a stiff fight. After a few more minutes of galloping around and firing arrows at the wagons, they turned their ponies and raced off into the distance. The dust cloud they had raised gradually began to dissipate. Preacher walked around the inside of the circle, checking on everyone.
You all right, son?
Yeah, I'm fine. I was scared, but I just kept loading the rifles and handing them Mr. Corliss and Mr. Jerome.
You done good work. Man who never gets scared ain't brave, he's just a darn fool. It's a fellow who's scared but does what needs to be done anyway who's really got the most courage.
Preacher turned to Corliss and Jerome.
How about you two?
We're all right. Corliss shot more of those savages than I did.
It wasn't a competition. I just wanted them to go away and leave us alone.
Corliss went to the rear of the wagon and pushed the canvas flat aside.
Deborah, are you all right?
Yes. I was really frightened because I kept hearing arrows strike the wagon. A few of them tore all the way through the canvas. But I stayed down like you told me to, Corliss, and I was fine.
Corliss reached up to help her down from the vehicle.
Well, you don't have to worry anymore. The savages are gone. Better not look out there, though. There are quite a few bodies lying around.
Don't be so sure the trouble's over.
What do you mean? The Indians left.
For now, yeah. Ain't nothing stopping them from coming back later.
Are you sure about that? They lost quite a few of their men. Surely they won't risk attacking us again.
Not unless they go back and get a bunch more warriors to come with them next time. As war parties go, this was a small one. They were probably just hoping to steal some ponies from another tribe or something like that. They didn't expect to run across a wagon train. They should have passed us by. They won't make the mistake of hitting us with a small group again.
But they might not come back at all, right?
They might not. You can never tell which way an engine's going to jump.
A quick check of the other men confirmed that the arrow wound in Lars Nielsen's arm was the only injury the defenders had suffered. A couple of the oxen were dead and would have to be replaced on the teams. Preacher got the uninjured drivers busy tending to that while he looked at Nielsen's arm.
Take it out, yeah?
Yeah, but it ain't gonna be pleasant. I can't just pull it out because the barbs on the arrow will cause more damage that way. I'm gonna have to push it all the way through.
Do what you have to do.
Preacher took hold of the shaft and snapped it off close to where the arrowhead was buried in Nielsen's arm.
Hang on. Now don't relax, that's just part one. Jerome, grab a jug of whiskey and bring it over.
Here you go, Preacher.
Preacher poured the fiery liquor through the wound.
Jake, go fetch me a powder horn.
God in heaven, what are you going to do now?
I got to fix these wounds so they'll heal up and not fester.
Here you go, Preacher.
Preacher sprinkled the black powder around the bloody openings. Then he took an unloaded pistol, cocked it, and held it close enough to the entrance wound so that when he clicked the hammer against the flint...
Those wounds ought to be all right now, but we'll keep an eye on them just to be sure.
Goddamned Redskins! This is all their fault. I almost wish they would come back so I could kill some more of them.
Well, I hope you don't get your wish, Lars. Jake, can you get some clean strips of cloth, wrap them around Mr. Nielsen's arm, and tie them good and tight?
Sure, Preacher.
We'll be pulling out as soon as we can.
Corliss waved a hand at the Pawnee corpses.
What about them?
Rest of the bunch will be coming back to get their bodies. That's one reason we don't want to be here when they do. Let's put some ground between us and them.
That sounds like a good idea to me. We were lucky, weren't we, Preacher?
Oh, yeah. Damn lucky.
Skylar Mims, Colin Fairfax, and the rest of Shad Beaumont's men heard the firing to the south and stopped.
Sounds like a damn battle's going on. What do you reckon it is, Colin?
I don't know, but it's got to involve that wagon train. They might have run into some Indians or something like that. We better go see about it. By God, nobody better try to steal those trade goods before we do.
Fairfax decided that only a small party would investigate, because they'd be less likely to be spotted by Preacher or any other members of the Hart expedition. The rest of the men would wait right where they were until the scouts came back. Skylar, Fairfax, and two other men, Burns and Loomis, rode south toward the tower and spire of rock they had spotted earlier. Shots seemed to be coming from that direction.
Now it sounds like the battle's over.
Yes, but we don't know what that means. Preacher and the others could have been wiped out. Someone could be stealing those wagons right out from under our very noses.
A few minutes later, they spotted a dust cloud moving off to the east. A
lot of riders headed that way.
Yes, but the wagons aren't with them. The dust is moving too fast for that.
The four men kept riding. They circled around the rock spire, which was a stark striated reddish brown. The broad base was the same color, but it was streaked with green on its lower levels where the grass from the plains had crawled up onto the rocky surface. Shortly after riding around the tower and rock chimney, they spotted dark shapes lying on the ground ahead of them.
Damn. Are those what I think they are?
They appear to be bodies.
As they neared the bodies, Skylar saw the buckskins and the feathers in the war paint. The dead men all had thick, midnight dark hair smeared with some sort of grease. They were Injuns, all right. Skylar had no idea which tribe they belonged to. He didn't know how to identify such things. There were also a couple of dead oxen, their bodies feathered with arrows. Fairfax pointed to marks on the ground.
See the wheel ruts? The wagons were here. It looks like they circled up, then moved out again.
They had to stop and fight Injuns. And they must have won, or they wouldn't have kept on going, and all these dead fellas wouldn't still be laying here.
Boss, we better get out of here. I don't know a whole heap about Injuns, but I know they don't leave their dead behind. If any of them were left alive, they're gonna come back for these bodies.
Burns nodded.
Loomis is right, Mr. Fairfax. We need to light a shuck while we still can.
There's no sign that any members of the Hot Party were killed. No fresh graves or anything like that. So we can assume that they're still at full strength and still headed for the mountains.
So we join up with the rest of the fellas and go set up that ambush like we figured on doing all along.
That's right. Now let's get moving.
Scott's Bluff, seen at sunset, was a massive parapet of sandstone, carved by wind and weather into bizarre, twisted shapes. It was even more impressive than Chimney Rock had been when the wagons passed by it and through an opening Preacher called Mitchell's Pass. It had taken most of 2 days to reach it from Chimney Rock. Once the wagons were clear of the pass, they had been pulled into a circle as usual. The atmosphere in camp that night was quiet and subdued. No one had forgotten the engine attack the day before, and Preacher had decided that tonight, as they had on the previous night, they would have a cold camp with no fire. That made the pilgrims even more depressed. Even during summer, there was nothing like cheerful dancing flames to perk up people's spirits.
I think we need to talk.
Preacher looked around in the gathering dusk, seeing that Jerome was talking to Corliss and Deborah, not him.
Talk about what?
The three of us.
What is there to say? We're still business partners, and Deborah is back where she belongs.
Let me get this straight. When you thought that Deborah had chosen me over you, you wanted to dissolve our partnership, split up the goods and the wagons, and establish two separate trading posts.
What's your point, Jerome?
If that was a fair reaction from you, why shouldn't it be my reaction as well? I'm just as hurt by Deborah's rejection of me as you were when you thought she had rejected you.
Oh, don't take it that way, Jerome. I still think you're a fine man, and I care about you a great deal.
Please. You tried to woo Deborah for a few days. And you think that makes what you're feeling the equal of the pain I felt when I thought the two of you were betraying me?
Betrayal is betrayal. And for a heart to break doesn't require that a great deal of time be spent with the one doing the breaking.
Stop it, Jerome. You know I never meant to hurt you.
Yes, stop it. You always were a poor loser, even when we were children.
I want the same thing you wanted, Corliss. I want to establish my own trading post, so that I won't have to see the two of you together, especially all winter.
Don't be ridiculous. Preacher told us it would be dangerous for us to split up our party now.
I'm not talking about splitting up the party. I'll wait until we get to South Pass, as planned. I'll even give you the prime location, Corliss, because I want to see you succeed. For Deborah's sake. But I'm going to take three of the wagons and some of the trade goods and find a place of my own.
What do you think of this idea, Preacher?
Me? Well, it don't make no never mind to me what you folks do once you get to where you're going. All I'm concerned about is getting you there with your hair still attached to your heads and all the trade goods in them wagons. I will say this, though. You fellas will have a whole lot better chance of making it if you stick together. Split up, you'll be that much easier targets for every revenge and engine and renegade white man in this part of the country.
I'll take my chances. That's better than being constantly reminded of what I lost.
Well, you might think about it mighty hard before you make up your mind. Now, everybody might as well get some sleep, except for me and Robinson. We'll be standing the first watch.
While everyone was getting ready to turn in, some inside the wagons and some on the ground underneath them, Preacher went over to Lars Nielsen.
How's your arm tonight?
Very stiff and sore, yeah. But I'm all right. I can still use it.
I'll take a look at the wounds in the morning. Gotta make sure they don't go to putrefying. You'll lose your arm if they do.
I do not want that.
Neither do I, old son. Get some rest.
The night passed quietly, and early the next morning, the wagon train moved on, leaving Scott's Bluff behind and beginning its approach to the foothills of the Laramie Mountains. Although not steep, the ground had a steady upward slope to it. The oxen strained against their traces to haul the heavily loaded vehicle.
Why don't we just go all the way around the mountains?
Too far. We'd have to swing too far north and then back to the south to hit the pass between this range of mountains and the next.
Is that the South Pass you've been talking about, Preacher?
Nope. South Pass, the place we're heading for, is a heap farther on.
How much farther?
Another week, maybe two.
The pines that grew thickly on the slopes of the foothills gave the landscape ahead of the wagons a dark green cast. The Preacher could almost smell the sharp tang of the pines. Their route followed the shallow valleys between the foothills. They camped that night at the head of a long, grassy valley with a creek meandering through it. The Preacher told the others it would be all right to have a small fire again.
We're out of Pawnee country now. They won't come up here after us.
What sort of Indians live around here?
Cheyenne, mostly. Few Arapaho.
Are they hostile?
Well, they can be. Mostly it depends on how you treat them. None of them are as bad as the Blackfoot. Hell, a Blackfoot will kill any white man he comes across, no matter what the fella does. Or they'll try to, anyway. There was a bunch of Blackfoot that grabbed me one time, tied me to a tree, and planned on torturing me to death the next morning.
And you got away?
I'm here, ain't I?
How'd you do it? Did you get loose and kill all of them?
I'll tell you all about it after supper. Now why don't you hustle up some wood for the fire, huh?
Sure, but I'll hold you to that promise. I want to hear the story.
Preacher started to turn away from the valley that spread out before the wagons, but then something caught his eye. The valley was a couple of miles long, and at the far end it narrowed down to a canyon where it passed between two rough, rock-strewn ridges. Preacher thought he had seen something moving up there in that canyon, even at that distance. But he stood there for a long moment, watching the place with his keen eyes narrowed, and he didn't spy anything else. He didn't think he'd imagine the movement, but it could have been anything. An antelope, a moose, a grizzly bear, even an eagle or an owl swooping low to flit through the canyon. Didn't have to mean a damn thing. Taking note of it had just been a matter of instinct and habit. Despite being aware of all that, though, Preacher knew that come morning, when the wagon train passed through that canyon, he would be especially watchful. Because that was a mighty fine place for an ambush if he had ever seen one. After Schuyler, Fairfax, Burns, and Loomis rejoined the rest of Beaumont's men, the entire group pushed on west toward the mountains, riding fairly hard. By nightfall, Fairfax judged that they were far enough ahead of the wagon train to turn back to the southwest. That would keep them ahead of the Hart expedition, but still allow them to intercept the wagons in a day or two. Another day's travel found them in the foothills, with the snow-capped peaks looming ahead of them, and an even taller range farther west that could be glimpsed from time to time. Fairfax led the group to the top of a thickly wooded ridge and called a halt there.
All right, Schuyler, we'll wait here while you locate the wagon train and determine what's going on. Take Burns and Loomis with you. They seem like good men.
Well, thanks for the vote of confidence, boss.
I meant it just like it sounded, but I can choose someone else if you'd prefer.
No, boss, that's fine. I'm glad you got faith in me and old Loomis.
We'll camp here. You can start scouting for the wagon train in the morning.
Schuyler, Burns, and Loomis were on their way before sunrise, riding back out to the edge of the foothills. Being careful to remain in the cover of the trees, he ranged up and down for several hours, searching the approaches to the slopes for any sign of the wagons. Around the middle of the day, Schuyler thought he spotted something. He still had Fairfax's spyglass, so he took it out, opened it up, and lifted the lens to his eye.
There they are.
Yeah, I can kind of see the wagons too, even without that glass.
Are they all there?
Yeah. It don't look like they were damaged during the engine fight. Gollum's gonna be happy. I bet all the trade goods are just fine.
Well, what do we do now?
You go back and tell Colin that we found them. Loomis and I'll stay here and watch until we're sure where they're going.
Burns nodded and turned his horse, accepting the order without hesitation. For the next couple of hours, the two men watched, well concealed in the pines, as the wagons drew closer. They were less than 500 yards away when the vehicles entered the foothills, not following any trail that Schuyler could see. The preacher seemed to know where he was going. He rode in front of the wagon train, leading the way, and the pace of the rangy stallion the mountain man rode never faltered. Schuyler and Loomis let the wagons get well ahead before following them. The two men stayed back and used every bit of cover they could find as they stalked their quarry. The wagon train wound through the foothills, and the preacher still rode with the confident certainty of a man who was sure of not only his surroundings, but also his destination. By late afternoon, the wagons had come to a stop at the head of a long, shallow valley. As soon as it became obvious that the expedition was going to make camp there for the night, Schuyler and Loomis agreed they'd better get back to the others. Schuyler had watched the landmarks closely during the day and had a pretty good idea where the rest of the gang was. In order to get there, though, they would have to go around Preacher and the others who were making camp. Schuyler led the way around the far side of one of the long hills that formed the valley. But when they came to the far end of the hill, they were greeted by a sheer cliff. A man might have been able to climb the rugged rock face, but a horse sure as hell couldn't.
Now what?
We'll go over that hill and through that canyon.
Well, Preacher's liable to spot us.
Well, we'll have to risk it. There's nothing else we can do.
Loomis shrugged in acceptance. He followed as Skyler urged his mount up the slope, weaving in and out of the clumps of pine trees. They crested the rise and started down. Skyler was nervously aware that they were where Preacher could see him now, if the mountain man happened to be looking in just the right spot. He took as many precautions as he could, using trees and boulders and thicket of brush for cover. By the time he and Loomis had worked their way down almost to the mouth of the canyon, Skyler wasn't quite so worried anymore. Stars were beginning to be visible here and there in the sky, which was turning purple and blue with the approach of night, by the time Skyler and Loomis rejoined the rest of their group. Burns was already there, having brought back the news earlier that the wagon train had been located.
Where are they? Camped at the head of the valley about 3 miles from here. I got an idea where we can hit them.
Really? Then let's hear it by all means.
Skyler began explaining about the valley and the canyon.
That's got to be where they're going. It's a natural path through the foothills.
Yeah, and you can't get through to the east because there's a damn cliff there. They'll be going right straight down that valley to the canyon at the far end.
Canyon's the best place to set up our ambush. Both sides are pretty steep, and there are plenty of trees and rocks we can use for cover. If we get up there tomorrow morning and hide while the wagons are coming up the valley, Preacher and the folks with him won't have any idea what's waiting for him.
Yes, sounds like it could work. I'll have to see the layout for myself, of course.
I'm telling you, it's a sure thing.
Yes, so was shooting Preacher and stealing his furs when he was paddling the canoe down the river above St. Louis. And you saw how that worked out.
You set up the ambush in that canyon and you'll see. And you could just leave Preacher to me. This time that long-legged son of a bitch is gonna die.
Sure smells nice in the mountains.
Well, these ain't the mountains yet, but yeah, I do like the smell of pine. Makes a man feel glad to be alive.
Jerome came up and sat down beside them.
I've been thinking, Preacher. After we reach South Pass and find a suitable location for Corliss's trading post, would you be willing to come along with me and help me decide where mine will be? I'd be glad to pay you an additional fee for your help.
You ain't giving up on that crazy idea yet?
On the contrary, I'm more convinced than ever it's the right thing to do. And it's hardly a crazy idea. As large as the frontier is, there should be plenty of room for dozens of trading posts, maybe hundreds.
You really don't have to leave on account of us, Jerome.
I believe that's my decision to make, and I've made it. How about it, Preacher? Are you willing to come along with Jake and myself?
Wait just a minute, Jerome. What makes you think that Jake is going with you?
Well, he's been riding next to me on the wagon for the entire trip. We've become good friends, haven't we, Jake?
Yeah, sure, I guess.
You didn't even want him to come along to start with.
That's different. I've gotten to know him since then. He's not as big a brat as I thought he'd be.
Gee, thanks.
Corliss, Jake's not a brat at all. He's a fine boy, and I'd like for him to stay with us. I've come to think of you almost like a son, Jake. You should stay with us. It'll be like you have a real father and mother again.
Oh, please. Corliss is hardly an appropriate father figure for anyone, let alone an impressionable young lad.
That's not true. He's going to be a fine father to our children.
That's right. So it's settled. Jake stays with us.
It's not settled at all.
Damn it! Stop fighting over me!
Really, Jake, that's not appropriate language for a boy to be using.
I don't care what's appropriate. I don't like all this fussing. And it don't matter, because I ain't going with either of you.
You're not? Then where are you going to go?
I'm gonna go with Preacher here. He's gonna teach me how to be a mountain man.
Now, dadgummit, I never said nothing of the sort.
Aw, come on, Preacher. Ain't you never had a partner before? I'll work hard, I swear it.
I ain't doubting that. And yeah, I have rode with partners before from time to time, but none of them was kids.
You were a kid once.
And I done what I was told, too. Now, you can stay with Corliss or Jerome, whichever you decided. Don't make no never mind to me. But I got beaver to trap once I'm done with these folks, and you ain't coming with me.
Suddenly, Jake turned around and plunged out of the circle of firelight at a run. Jerome, Corliss, and Deborah all jumped up.
Preacher, you've got to go after him.
That's right. You can't let a youngster like that go wandering around in the wilderness in the middle of the night.
He's just a helpless little boy.
Oh, Jake ain't helpless. He's got a pistol and a knife, and he knows how to use both of them. Besides that, he ain't gonna go far. He's just mad. Like any kid, he's gonna go off and sulk for a spell. Then he'll come back.
What if he runs into a grizzly or some other dangerous animal?
Or an Indian?
Give him a minute or two to cool off and then I'll go find him, all right?
You're right about one thing. Jake can't live with you. He needs to stay with me.
Or Deborah and me.
Preacher left them there to waste time and energy on a new argument if they wanted to. He picked up his rifle and started toward the edge of camp.
I go with you. I had me a kid once. I know how they like to hide.
I'm obliged.
Sitting on a log, Jake tried to figure out why Preacher didn't want him around. He couldn't understand it. He reckoned he just wasn't a good enough kid for anybody to want him. The noise came from somewhere behind Jake.
Preacher? Preacher, you come looking for me?
Jake started to get to his feet and turn around.
Preacher, are you sure I can't come with you?
A hard hand clamped like iron over his mouth and jerked him backward.
Shit, that's Jake! Come on!
Before they could get there, a shape burst out of the brush and rushed toward him. Preacher and Blackie stopped and swung their rifles up.
Hold it! That's Jake!
Preacher lowered his gun and stepped forward to catch the boy.
Let me go, you damn redskin! Let me go!
Settle down, Jake. Jake, it's me, Preacher.
Lord, I thought for sure he was going to scout me.
You say there's an engine out there somewhere, Yonker?
Yeah, I was sitting on a log over yonder when he grabbed me from behind. I thought he was going to scout me.
You sure it was an engine?
Yeah, I twisted around and got a look at him. I couldn't see him real good because it's dark, but I saw the feathers in his hair.
How'd you get away from him?
He had his hand over my mouth, so I bit the hell out of it.
What happened then?
He let go of me, and I started running back to camp. I was afraid he'd grab me again or shoot an arrow at me, so I ran as fast as I could.
Well, chances are, if there really was an engine, he's long gone by now.
Hey, what do you mean, really was an engine? You think I made the whole thing up?
No, I reckon you didn't. You've never been the sort of kid who makes up stories like some do.
Sorry, kid, I didn't mean to make it sound like I thought you was lying. Was it just one redskin?
One was all I heard or saw, but it was dark. There could have been others.
All right, let's get back to camp. I reckon the others are probably worried about us.
Blackie put a hand on Jake's shoulder and steered him toward the wagons, while Preacher backed away from the spot where Jake had encountered the engine, holding his rifle ready just in case. No one followed them or took a shot at him, and a few minutes later they were back in camp, where Deborah hurried forward to throw her arms around the boy and hug him.
Oh, Jake! Oh, you poor, poor thing! Oh.
Jake looked uncomfortable. He tolerated the hug for a few moments and then started trying to pry himself loose. Corliss and Jerome were both right there, too, hovering anxiously over him.
Are you all right, Jake? We heard shouting. Are you hurt?
No, I'm fine. I just got grabbed by an Indian, that's all.
An Indian?
But I got away from him, and then I ran into Preacher and Blackie. They brought me back here.
How did you get away from him?
Jake explained again about biting his captor's hand.
From the way he turned loose of me right quick-like and hooted, I'll bet it hurt him plenty.
I bet it did, too. Most fellas can't stand being bit.
There was just one Indian.
Just one I saw, but there could have been a whole war party out there for all I know. I reckon I shouldn't have gone running off like that just because I got mad.
You certainly shouldn't have. You had us all very worried, Jake. Don't do that again.
I won't, but you gotta stop fighting over me. I don't know what I'm gonna do when we get where we're going, but it ought to be my decision, oughtn't it?
You're too young to make any important decisions like where you're going to live. We're just trying to look out for your best interest, Jake.
That's why Deborah and I think you should live with us.
That's not necessarily...
Pipe down! There's been enough squabbling tonight. You can figure out what Jake's going to do later after we get to South Pass. Now, let's just worry about getting there with our hair still on our heads and all those trade goods intact.
You're right, Preacher. What do you think that Indian wanted with Jake?
Well, they'll carry off white kids from time to time. They take them into the tribe and raise them up like family. When they're raiding, Indians will kill youngsters, but when they grab one like that, they generally don't mean him any harm, at least according to their lights. Chances are that one wouldn't hurt Jake.
But he would have carried me off and tried to make an engine out of me. That'd be worse than killing me.
When things had settled down some and most of the members of the group were sitting around the fire again, Preacher went to check on Horse. Blackie followed him.
You reckon there was just the one engine?
No telling. Could have been. Could have been a whole war party out there.
If that was true, they would have gone ahead and jumped us, wouldn't they?
Well, you've been to see the elephant, Blackie. You know there's no way of knowing what an engine's gonna do. What seems right to him might not make a lick of sense to you and me. But I got a feeling there was just the one warrior. I don't know why, but that's what my gut tells me.
What do you want with Jake?
I don't know. But if he tries again, maybe we'll find out.
Skyler had been able to get the gang within half a mile of the canyon. And then, as the gray light of dawn began to spread, he got his bearings even more and led them the rest of the way, assisted by Loomis and Burns. As the sun began to peek over the eastern horizon, Colin Fairfax surveyed the scene and nodded in approval.
You are right, Skyler. This is a good place for an ambush. Everyone spread out. I want men on both sides of the canyon. Find good spots with plenty of cover where you can fire down on those wagons as they come through. But nobody fires until I give the word. Now get going.
As they fanned out over the rocky wooded slopes that form the canyon, Skyler came up to Fairfax.
Don't forget what I told you last night. Preacher's mine. You're welcome to him. Just don't miss this time. The quicker he dies, the better.